How we doing? Hour number four of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. It's a little off-season edition, NFL draft edition, post-NFL draft edition of Overreaction, Proper Reaction. Hot take, Hickey? Hit it.
Another NFL week is complete, which means it's another week to freak out about your favorite team. Which takes are truly crazy.
But sometimes a game can be so bad, it's almost good. You know what I'm saying? No.
And which are so crazy, they might be right.
He's 6'5", he's 245 pounds. He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end.
Zach lets you know in this week's edition of Overreaction or Proper Reaction.
Well, I think at this rate, Hickey, if we had a Popeye's biscuit, we would just be moved right to the offensive line after just a gluttonous amount of food that we did eat in Kansas City. And I had to stay there for an extra day because Delta is incompetent and all the flights to New York got to New York besides my flight. But that's a story for a different day. I'm sure you've already seen enough about it on Twitter. But we ate well in Kansas City with the ribs, the burnt ends, the wings, and at the airport, some of the best mac and cheese I've ever had, by the way. When I was stranded in that airport for like 8 hours, I was and it's a brand new airport. I searched, what's the best place to eat in the airport in Kansas City? And someone said I had to go to this place and get their bacon mac and cheese. It was the largest bowl. It wasn't a bowl. It was like a pallet, pretty much. Like, I don't even know how to describe it. It was humongous in terms of a tray of mac and cheese. That's the word I'm looking for.
Sounds like the delay was worth it.
No, it wasn't. I went back to the hotel and I was like, oh, the Rangers game is on. I'm kind of hungry now. And I ordered I ordered 10 of those wings from Jack Stacks. But those wings were very good.
They were good wings.
Tremendous. And the baked beans, too, from Jack Stacks. That's the one thing you didn't try. So one thing you stayed away from was the baked beans. The cheesy corn and the baked beans. Those baked beans are the best baked beans I've ever had at Jack Stacks.
Not a big beans guy, especially baked beans. Like,
they were delicious.
Not my thing, but I'm just going to leave the audience hanging. Me and you went to Kansas City last week.
Yeah.
And we ate wings. Real wings.
Yeah.
For the audience members that think I'm not a man, not tough enough.
Well, you did ask for boneless wings, and I said, no, that's not happening. I slapped your hand like you were a child.
I was not going to embarrass myself in front of you and Carrington Harrison and the people of Kansas City by asking, hey, do you have any boneless wings at a barbecue joint? I'm
Chicken
not that
nuggets.
Dumb. Wouldn't have done it. And the wings were delicious.
I'm really disappointed in you.
In me?
Yeah, because you looked at, what was it, that carrot cake cupcake?
Yes.
Say that 10 times fast. And you're like, oh, I'm not going to try it. And I go, shut up, just try it. And you tried it, and it was delicious.
It was very good.
You should have done the same with the baked beans. Because I've had baked beans before. I've never had baked beans like those baked beans that I had at Jack Stacks. Those baked beans were the best baked beans I've ever had. And they were spicy, too.
I do not regret my decision to pass on them.
Yeah, because you're a child. You don't try anything. Anyway.
Okay.
Give me a little overreaction,
Crushed
proper reaction.
Burger, barbecue. But nonetheless, overreaction, proper reaction for the NFL draft softball here. Total easy one. Overreaction or proper reaction. The Panthers made the right choice in drafting Bryce Young number one overall.
That's a proper reaction. I do think David Tepper, and it's his team, but I do think there's a lot of times he steps into things and doesn't let his kind of coaches and general managers make the decisions. This could be one of those things as well, because I really do believe, I don't know how you feel on this, it feels like Frank Reich really wanted C.J. Stroud. Maybe I'm 100% wrong on this, but that's what everyone was saying. And I do think Bryce Young really wanted, David Tepper really wanted Bryce Young. I don't know who Scott Fitterer wanted. So maybe that was two against one. But I do think what David Tepper wants is what David Tepper gets. And in this case, I do believe it's the right decision. Not that T.J. Stroud's going to be bad, but when I look at those quarterbacks and the way that they've played the last 2 years, I've been a lot more impressed with Bryce Young than C.J. Stroud. Stroud was great against Georgia. But throughout the entire season, we were talking about it. Like, C.J. Stroud didn't play as great as he was supposed to be. And he had a lot more talent than Bryce Young. And let's not forget what Bryce Young did 2 years ago against Georgia in that SEC title game if you're going to sit there and tell me that C.J. Stroud's best game was up against Georgia. Like, let's not forget about what Bryce Young has done up against Georgia, which was a better defense 2 years ago as well. So that was the right pick, proper reaction.
All right, one quarterback that fell out of the first round, that was a surprise, was Will Levis. So overreaction or proper reaction, Will Levis rightly was not drafted in the first round.
I actually think that is a proper reaction. And we talked about this heading into the draft, that I thought five quarterbacks, not that they should go in the first round, but I thought five quarterbacks were going to go in the first round. Because I really did believe, at one point I thought we could see one, two, three, four, quarterback, 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 quarterback. But I thought we would see bare minimum all five or all four go in the top 15. And if you had four go in the top 15, then someone would kind of sneak in the back end of the first round to go get Hendon Hooker. But I thought it was pretty clear that the three best quarterbacks in this draft class were Bryce Young 1, C.J. Stroud 2, and then 3, I thought the guy with the most upside, or the term I hate the most, the highest ceiling between everyone else, was Anthony Richardson. And once Richardson went to the Colts, if like Richardson was there for the Lions or Seahawks, I think it's a different conversation. But he wasn't. And the Raiders weren't drafting Will Levis. So once he got past the Raiders, it was like, all right, maybe the Falcons. And once he got past the Falcons, it was like, he's going to fall. And then we were like, all right, is it the Bucs or is it the Vikings? Those teams are looking for quarterbacks. I don't think Will Levis is your long-term quarterback. So why take a quarterback just to take a quarterback? I don't think Will Levis is as great as what people are making him out to be. Now, I'm not sitting here and telling you I thought for sure he was going to fall into the first round. Like, if you told me that an hour before we went on the air for the draft show, I would say, what are you smoking? I would have never believed it in a single second. But I don't think it's crazy now, because if we're being fair, I don't think he's that good. And it's kind of similar to Malik Willis last year, where Malik Willis wasn't getting projected as high as Will Levis was. But a lot of people were telling you, like, oh, Malik Willis will definitely go in the first round, and then he falls to 3. So probably the grade that analysts put out there is obviously not the grade that the scouts had out there for Will Levis.
It did take a little bit, but we did see a run on receivers go late in the first round. Four straight receivers went from picks 20 to 23. The first one was Ohio State wide receiver Jackson Smith and Jigba. So overreaction or proper reaction, JSN was deservingly the first wide receiver off the board.
I had this conversation with him off the air on Wednesday, where I said to him, I'm not just saying this because you're standing right in front of me. I think you're the best wide receiver in this draft class. And I was talking to him about how a few years ago, Justin Jefferson, I thought he was the best wide receiver in the draft class, and he fell to the fifth wide receiver taken. So I believe that it's him 1, then Johnston 2, and then I do think there's more upside for Zay Flowers, even though Addison has shown more. But I think the order that they went was spot on. And I actually like the destinations for all four of those wide receivers with the teams that they did go to. But I remember even saying last year, like, I thought Olave was the best wide receiver in the draft class. And he even beat the first wide receiver off the board. But I really do like Jackson Smith and Jigba. He wasn't available this year. He had a legit hamstring injury. But a year ago, he was dominant. He was great. He was sensational. Remember that Rose Bowl game that he had too? So I think because we haven't seen him a lot last year because of the injury, people forgot how good he was. But he ended up going first off the board, so I'm good with it.
So the NFL draft, right, it's all about projection, who we think will be the best, who is good, who is not. So let's do a little projection. 10 years from now, overreaction or proper reaction, C.J. Stroud will be the best quarterback from this draft class.
I'm laughing at something else, by the way.
What is that?
I just got a text from an old producer of mine.
Mikey B?
Yeah. Did he text you too?
No, I'm not cool enough to be on that thread.
Oh, it's not a thread. He individually texted me. So he individually texted me. He goes, that was one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Hickey is an idiot. Legit. The dumbest thing I've ever heard on the radio, in you saying that Jessica Alba is maybe past her prime a little bit, which it is the dumbest thing I've ever heard on the radio. But I don't want to cause any more attention to it, but I had to laugh a little bit when Mikey B said that. Because Mikey B is a good judge of character, and he's a good judge of being, like, he'd be perfect for overreaction, proper reaction, because he's, like, right down the line, and he's pretty unbiased. He's 1,000% right on that. That was a bad take by you that you had. But anyway, ask me your next question.
2033, we're in the year. CJ Stroud is the best quarterback of this draft class.
That's an overreaction. I think it is Bryce Young. And CJ Stroud goes to the Texans, which I like what the Texans did, even though they traded away that first round pick, but eventually you got to start getting players. But I like getting Stroud and Will Anderson Jr. in there. I just don't know if the Texans are going to work. And there's been so much instability in that organization. So, like, if he went to a place where it was, like, a much better fit than the other quarterbacks, I'd be like, okay, yeah, you could make that argument, even though I don't think he's the best quarterback. So, in this case, I'll say that talent wins out, or the field wins out, if you're asking me if it's C.J. Stroud against the field. So, I'll go over reaction there.
The Texans made a big swing in getting Will Anderson Jr. off the board at number 3. He was the first defensive player taken in the draft. Overreaction or proper reaction, the Texans made a mistake by drafting Will Anderson Jr. over Tyree Wilson or Jalen Carter, whatever defensive player you think maybe should have went first.
I'll go overreaction on there. I think what happened with Will Anderson Jr., the way he was being talked about before the draft, was very similar to the fact of the way that we talked about Kayvon Thibodeau, where he was the guy for a year, where, like, Kayvon Thibodeau and Will Anderson were great, and then they had to go back, and then people were, like, tired of talking about them, and then people thought that they were going to fall a little bit in this draft class. I thought Will Anderson should have been the first defensive player off the board. He ended up being the first defensive player off the board. There's no character concerns. There's no off-the-field issues like there were with Jalen Carter. Tyree Wilson, I guess there was an injury concern from what we found out. I think it was with his foot. So I'm more than fine with the Texans taking Will Anderson Jr. there at 3.
Let's stick with that trade then for a second. In order to get Will Anderson Jr., the Texans traded up from number 12 to number 3. They gave the Cardinals a first-round pick. It's important. They gave the Cardinals their own first-round pick next year, not the Browns' first-round pick. Why is that important? Because right now, Vegas has the Texans with the second longest odds to win the Super Bowl. So that could be a top 5, top 3, top 2 pick potentially in next year's draft. Overreaction or proper reaction? The Texans trading their own first round pick next year for Will Anderson Jr. was a mistake.
I'm going overreaction there because this is why they did it. They wanted Will Anderson. They also clearly liked C.J. Stroud enough to take him. Tennessee was going to move up to 3 if they didn't take C.J. Stroud at 2. And clearly they liked C.J. Stroud enough to trust him to be the future at quarterback. So if you would have just taken Will Anderson, who you loved, that means you would have missed out on C.J. Stroud, and then Tennessee would have moved up to 3 to make the trade with the Cardinals. So they took Stroud 2, then Tennessee stop trading up to 3 because Tennessee would have only made that trade up to 3 if C.J. Stroud was there, and then they take Will Anderson, and they got the best of both worlds. Now, I hear what you're saying. Maybe you want Caleb Williams next year, but if you don't get the number 1 overall pick, you're not going to get Caleb Williams. And all year we thought the Texans were going to get the number 1 overall pick to get Bryce Young, and the last game of the season, it cost him. It's so tough to do that. And maybe you win more games than it's expected. Eventually, you got to pick players. And they went through their scouting process. They loved Will Anderson. They loved C.J. Stroud. I have no problem saying we're going to give away our next first-round pick and get your quarterback and your edge rusher this year. So no problem with that whatsoever.
A lot of teams feel good about their drafts. Overreaction or proper reaction, the Eagles had the best draft of any team over the weekend.
I think it's a proper reaction, and here's why. Value-wise, Jalen Carter was a top 3 talent. They got him at 9. Nolan Smith, a lot of people thought he's going to be a top 20 pick. They got him at 30. That's tremendous value with a team that is already viewed as one of the top 3 or 4 teams in the NFL, and they got, no pun intended, dogs that could maybe help them go get that second Lombardi trophy. So for immediate impact, that's why I love what the Eagles did too.
And finally,
and they got
the last
DeAndre
one.
Swift, too, to bolster up that running back room.
That they did. A lot of talent, especially from Georgia, going up to Philly. Finally, let's project 30 years out. Let's get crazy. Overreaction or proper reaction? There will be at least one Hall of Famer from this class.
Are you serious? Just one?
Yeah, one.
Just one Hall of... That's it?
Yeah, I don't think it's a lock every year. I mean, got to go through the draft, but I don't think that's anywhere but a certainty.
There will be one Hall of Famer. I'll take my chances on that. And what, 250-something picks?
All right, let's narrow it down. First round, 32 picks.
Yeah.
First Hall of Famer out of one of those 32.
Well, there's only 31, but yeah.
31.
I would say that one of the 31 players selected will be a Hall of Famer. I will go proper reaction there. That was a layup. I thought it was like a trick question there. Take a break. We'll talk a little Lakers, Golden State Warriors next. Trevor Lane will join us.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. A great game last night between the Lakers and Warriors. Lakers take game one, $117-112. Let's head out to the guest line right now and welcome in a host for Lakers Nation, and that's Trevor Lane, who's kind enough to join us right now. Trevor, how you been?
Hey, I'm doing well, Zach. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. So it's no secret. We know LeBron James is the Lakers' best player, but for them to win a championship this year, Anthony Davis needs to be their most valuable player. You saw that last night, AD going off, 30 points and 23 rebounds. What did you see from AD, and how do you kind of describe that performance looking back at it a day later?
I mean, it was just an amazing performance, dominant on both ends of the floor. He was absolutely phenomenal. And I'll tell you what, you look at the box score and 30 points and 23 rebounds and all the blocks and all the scoring, all the stuff that he did that shows up on the stat sheet, all of that was amazing. But watching the game, I couldn't believe how many times he shut down things that Golden State was trying to do just on the defensive end with his rotations, his ability to be protecting the paint while still free to roam out to the perimeter and contest shots at the three-point line. It was an absolutely masterful game by him. Just one of the best performances we've seen out of AD, period, and a reminder of just how talented this guy really is.
What are your expectations for AD for the rest of the series?
Well, I think he's got to be the backbone of the defense for sure. That's what he's been so far in the playoffs and for much of the season as well. But he's got to play at a high level, and I think that he needs to be the Lakers' best player moving forward here. It's what he's been so far. LeBron is still dealing with that foot injury. He's managing that. You can see he doesn't quite have the same level of explosiveness as you would hope to see from him. The three-point shot hasn't been falling. He's been finding other ways to help out the team, particularly rebounding. He's been blocking some shots, doing some good things defensively. But Anthony Davis has been the main driving force. He's been the guy where when he's off the floor, things tend to really start to slip for the Lakers. So AD's got to continue to play at an MVP caliber level. We know that he's got it in him. He's been a little bit inconsistent. We even saw that in the Memphis series. But they need him to be the best player on the floor. And that's what he was in game one. And we'll see if he can do that moving forward.
Trevor Lane is here with us. We were talking about this earlier, Trevor, when it comes to the Lakers retiring numbers. They haven't retired many numbers throughout their history, even with all the great players that they've had. Obviously, when LeBron retires, he's going to get his number retired by the Lakers. We were talking about Anthony Davis. What else do you think he needs to accomplish the rest of his career in a Lakers uniform for him to get that number retired?
Yeah, I mean, LeBron was talking about it last night, saying it was going to happen, and it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, Anthony Davis has been, you know, all NBA. He's been an all-star multiple times. He's been, one of the better players on a championship team. Done all those things. Obviously, a deep playoff run here would certainly help. If he were able to win a championship this year with the Lakers, that would obviously, I think, cement it. But it does seem like it's likely to happen. He's been one of the best players in the league while he's been a Laker. His availability isn't always great. But, when LeBron says it's going to happen, you tend to believe, yeah, it's probably going to happen by the time this is all said and done with Anthony Davis in a Lakers jersey. And we don't know how much longer that's going to be. I mean, he's 30, so he still has plenty of years left to continue playing. But he's definitely on that trajectory right now. And a deep playoff run this year certainly won't hurt his case.
I know perception is basically kind of the time where you ask the question. So the perception today of Anthony Davis is great. I think a lot of people forgot how great of a player he could be just because the injuries, unfortunately, have been right at the forefront. With the Laker fam, what is the perception of AD these days?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, it's phenomenal right now in the moment, but it was just a few months ago that people were asking the question, do the Lakers need to trade him? Is this, you know, is this the end of AD with the Lakers, and are they going to move on over the summer? You know, it was a very real question coming into the season. Was, can Anthony Davis be the guy that they brought him to L.A. to be? And that's the guy that would ultimately take the torch from LeBron James and would be able to carry the franchise moving forward. And the availability was a big question there. And there were moments in the season where, he was getting banged up. He got injured for a long stretch. And people were really starting to wonder whether or not AD was going to be long for Los Angeles or if they were going to need to make a move at some point. But right now, everybody's obviously really, really happy with what they've seen out of him. Defensively, he's been very consistent. He's been great the entire playoffs. And now on the offensive end, we saw him really get going against Golden State. So it's a reminder of how amazing he absolutely can be. But that availability, it's always, you're always kind of waiting. You're holding your breath every time he hits the ground or anything like that because you just never know. But right now, fans are obviously thrilled with what they're seeing out of him at the moment.
Whenever LeBron is on your team, it feels like all we talk about is LeBron, 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 and he gets all the praise and also gets all the criticism if things don't work out. I'll tell you, though, I think an underrated storyline here with the Lakers this year, or something that just doesn't get enough praise, is Rob Pelinka, because he did a masterful job at the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, they were able to pull off some really, really incredible things at the trade deadline. And this was, it was a big risk when, from all reporting, from everybody I've spoken to, they had the opportunity right before the season started, literally the day before media day, they had the opportunity to go get Buddy Hield and Miles Turner from the Pacers in a Russell Westbrook trade. It would have cost them both their first-round picks to do it, 2027 and 2029. But they decided to wait and see if they could get something better in the season. And so that's a gamble, you know, that number one, you can keep yourself afloat enough to give yourself an opportunity to do something if you can make a trade later on in the season. And number two, that anything's even going to come around, that you're going to find that deal. And so they took the risk. They went into the season with a roster that didn't make a lot of sense. And Rob and the Lakers front office, they managed to find a series of moves, getting Rui Hachimura, getting D'Angelo Russell, getting Jared Vanderbilt, Malik Beasley's in that deal. You know, they made these moves that just turned around their entire season. After the trade deadline, they had the best record in the Western Conference. So got to give that front office credit. They did a tremendous job.
I didn't have a problem with the pool shot last night. It was great defense by the Lakers where you get the ball out of Steph Curry's hand. How did you kind of look back at the ending of that game last night?
Yeah, I mean, it's always you hold your breath anytime the Warriors get an open look for three. You know how good they are at hitting those. But Jordan Poole shooting that deep of a shot in that situation, I think you live with it if you're the Lakers. So I wasn't too upset with that. If anything, if the Lakers are critical of themselves, they're probably looking in the film room at the shot that they took before that led to Poole getting that open look, LeBron settling for a three after running out much of the clock rather than getting some action going that would have got them, more to the basket or something like that. I think they were okay with giving up that look as long as it wasn't Steph getting that open look in that moment. You got to live with it.
I know it's the Warriors. It could happen just out of nowhere, but what the heck happened in the final few minutes of the game where just out of nowhere they went on that 14-0 run, the Warriors, and tied things up?
Yeah, so I think some of that was some poor decision-making by the Lakers. They settled a couple of times for some deep shots, and whenever you do that, you can give up some long rebounds, and that puts your opponent into at least semi-transition and can get scoring opportunities for them. So we saw that happen a little bit there, and the Warriors do a great job of capitalizing on opportunities like that. But we also saw it almost felt like the Lakers to themselves were saying, nope, we're not going to do this again. We're going to get the ball to the basket. We're not going to settle for jumpers. And they did and still missed. And they just couldn't get the ball in. Even when they were right at the rim, Anthony Davis, LeBron, they had offensive rebound opportunities right at the bucket and just couldn't get anything to drop. They went on about a four-minute stretch where they just couldn't score. And I'm sure it was frustrating because they couldn't get the jumpers to fall and they also couldn't get anything. Even when they said, hey, we're not going to continue to settle, we're going to get to the basket, they still couldn't get shots to drop. It was just bad timing. I think if they had to do it all over again, they'd probably employ the same strategy, get to the rim and just rely on the odds that ultimately those shots are going to fall. But that stretch. They did, and the Warriors got themselves right back in it and tied the game up.
Wrapping up with Trevor Lane, what has the coach brought to the team this year for the Lakers, making a change?
Darvin Ham came in with just with a very different mentality than Frank Vogel. You know, Vogel does a tremendous job, the previous coach, as a defense-first head coach. And Darvin Ham brings that element. He does a good job on the defensive end, not quite the same level of defensive coach as Vogel is, but the big thing for Darvin Ham is just he's a leader that people want to follow, and that he has that ability to inspire, and he gets guys just wanting to run through a brick wall for him. And it's that type of environment that he's fostered. And so it's created, I think, a little bit more positivity. They were able to withstand some tough times earlier in the season and come out the other side of it. Simply because of Darvin Ham, and just, you know, he's that guy that you'll run through a brick wall for. So he's brought that to the fold, and I really think he's grown as a coach over the course of the year. When you look at scheme wise and tactics and timeouts and substitution patterns and everything that he was doing at the beginning of the year, we've watched him progress and get better and better and better as the year's gone on, as he's really honed in on everything. So that's been very cool to watch as well.
It feels like this series just destined to go 7 games. You agree with that?
Yeah, it seems that way. These teams are so close. And wouldn't that be a treat? I mean, to get to see players the caliber of LeBron and Steph Curry and Anthony Davis, to see this go 7, it would be absolutely epic. Would be a historic series. But yeah, it does feel like that may very well be where this is ultimately headed, because there's zero chance that the Warriors are looking at that game one and saying, well, we're in trouble now. No, they've been in this situation. They know exactly what they need to do. I think this is going to be a long series.
What do we see from Anthony Davis tomorrow night? You get game two in that series, had a great game one. What does Anthony Davis do in game two?
I want to see how he adjusts to the adjustments, right? That's going to be key in playoff series. How do you adjust from game to game, and then how do you respond to the adjustments that your opponent is making? You know the Warriors are going to throw some different things at him to try to not let him get into a rhythm, to try to limit his impact. So how does he adjust to that? How does he manage to maintain his aggressiveness? We saw in 2 games in the Memphis series where he wasn't as much of a factor on the offensive end, where teams have been able to, even towards the tail end of the season, sort of take him out of the flow offensively. You know the Warriors will try to do that. They'll probably put Draymond on him for some stretches. They'll throw some doubles at him and things like that. So how does he respond in those moments? Does he counter those situations appropriately? That's what I'm going to be watching for, because that's what's probably going to determine how effective he is. Does he read the change defensively that's being thrown at him? And then what does he do to counter it?
Does a great job, host of Lakers Nation. Also check out the front office show. He, of course, is Trevor Lane. Trevor, great to catch up with you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Zach. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Trevor Lane joining us on the Zach Gelb Show. We'll come on back. We'll ring the closing bell. We'll tell you whose stock is booming, whose stock is dooming.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. Another day is in the books, and we're taking stock of the sports world. It's time to find out who's up and who's down. Let's end the day right and hit the closing bell. Only on the Zach Gelb Show.
All right, we'll start things off in the association last night. Anthony Davis, with just a dominant performance, reminded people how great of a player he could be. 30 points, 23 rebounds, 4 blocks. The Lakers take game one from the Golden State Warriors at the Chase Center, 117-112, and they wouldn't do so without the brow in Anthony Davis. Stock up. Let's go to the ice. Last night, the Florida Panthers go into Toronto after having a great upset of the Bruins in 7 games, and they take it to the Maple Leafs 4-2. Carter Verhaeghe, who had the game winner in overtime, to take down the Boston Bruins in 7 games. Bruins had the most points in NHL history, the most wins in NHL history. Well, Verhaeghe did strike again. He had a goal to make it 3-2 Panthers in the second period. Let's listen up to the Panthers Radio Network.
Carter Verhaeghe able to nudge it to the neutral zone. Duclair Verhaeghe and a breakaway pass to the defense. Verhaeghe and a shot, and he scores, and the Panthers are back in front. Carter Verhaeghe makes it 3-2.
What a feed from Duclair. And then it was Verhaeghe off to the races. And he beats Samsonov. And the Panthers get the lead back on their side.
And that was such a big goal because the Panthers did strike first. They get the Nick Cousins goal. And Sam Bennett makes it 2-0. But the Maple Leafs came back strong in the second to tie it up at 2 goals apiece. And that was with 14:51 into the second period. And then shortly after that, a few moments later, Carter Verhaeghe did get the goal. So give a stock up to the man that's just on fire right now in Carter Verhaeghe. Get to the other hockey game last night. The Kraken and Stars. What a hockey game this was between these two teams. As Joe Pavelski did have 4 goals at the age of 38 in the game last night. And it still wasn't enough as this game got to overtime. And Yanni Gourde said night-night.
Bjorkstrand blasting. Blocker down. Bjorkstrand gets his own rebound. Puts it back toward the goal. And never got through. Now Seattle scores! Scores! On the far side. It's hammered in off the rebound. Yanni Gourde, the overtime hero here in game one.
Give a stock up to Yanni Gourde and the Kraken. That was Everett Fitzhugh on the Kraken Radio Network. We've now played a few of his calls. I'm not really familiar with him, Hickey, but he's pretty damn good. There's some times you hear these broadcasters, like when we do in football season, what's the segment that we do at 9 p.m.? No Huddle Offense.
No Huddle
Offense. I almost forgot my own segment. And there's some calls that's like, oh, that's terrible. Everett Fitzhugh does a really good job. Last year, we fell in love with the Avalanche broadcaster.
Connor McGehee.
Yeah, he was great. I think now Everett Fitzhugh may need to make a guest appearance on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. He's tremendous. Really been a big fan of him. You know, give him a stock up as well. All right, we'll stay with the positives. Julius Randle. A guy that I feel like every other day, Hickey loves, then hates. That's a lot of Knicks fans. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Knicks needed to win. This is a must win. You can't lose both games at home against a better Heat team, in my opinion, and think you're going to win the series. And the Knicks, they got game two, no Jimmy Butler in the lineup. You get Julius Randle back, and he has 25 points, 12 rebounds, and 8 assists. And he also had Jalen Brunson, who was magnificent with 30 points, and I think he had 23 in the second half, and R.J. Barrett goes for 24 in the contest. But they need more of that from Julius Randle, so give Julius Randle a stock up. We'll get into the Jordan Poole shot in just a second in terms of my thoughts on it. But I want to play you Draymond Green last night from his podcast on The Volume. He defends Jordan Poole.
Quite frankly, I like the shot. You'd tell him to eat up the space and take three a little bit closer as there was, you know, he could have eaten up the space, but Jordan can shoot the ball, and he got a good look at it. Yes, you want him to take a couple steps in and get an even closer three, but Jordan taking that three is not why we lost that game.
I love the answer from Draymond Green. And I know Draymond Green gets praised a lot from his Warriors teammates for his leadership and his importance to the team. Draymond Green has also done a lot of dumb things. One of them, punching Jordan Poole in the face. Like, let's not bury the lead here. What happened in the last series as well was Sabonis was stupid. What he did up against LeBron in the finals that started that comeback was stupid. But I like that version of Draymond Green. You know how you're like up and down with Julius Randle? That's me with Draymond Green. Where for a while I really liked him. Then I couldn't stand him. A week ago I couldn't stand him. And I hear an answer like that. Even though you punch this guy in the face before the season started, that's what a good teammate does. And you know what? I think Draymond Green is 100% right. The defense for the Lakers was there. Stan Van Gundy had one of the great calls I've heard from a color analyst. They ran the ABC play on defense. Anybody but Curry. Curry had to pass the ball. He passes it to Draymond. And then he swings it over to Jordan Poole. Draymond's right. I could live with that shot. You would have liked him to have been closer, absolutely. But what else was Jordan Poole supposed to have done instead of got a little bit closer to that three-point line? The Warriors, how many times do we praise them for taking these ridiculous three-point shots? And I know it's Steph and Clay, but we praise them all the time. And Jordan Poole last year, even though he's not played well,
he's been referred to as a third Splash Brother. That's what happened there. They had to pass the ball because of great defense, and Poole was standing far away from the three-point line, but he's got to shoot it. Because if you notice, and I think a lot of times we let our emotions get in the way here, where it's we all wanted to see Steph hit that shot or square up from three. So anything other than that, we're going to be like, oh, terrible play. Oh, awful play. But what else is he supposed to do? Like, go back, watch the play. When Poole gets the ball and starts to square up with 10.5 seconds left, Steph is still standing and minimally moving at the half court line. So what else is he supposed to do, Poole? I didn't have a problem with the shot. I liked actually the response from Draymond Green. So in a bizarre way, Jordan Poole in a lot of people's eyes doing the quote-unquote wrong thing actually benefits Draymond Green. Give him a stock up. Hey, let me ask you a question going back to that Stars game last night. Joe Pavelski, who's 38 years old, for the Stars, had four goals in the game last night. But your team lost. You think he feels good after that game last night? I know they lost, but he had four goals in the game at the age of 38, and it's the first game of the series. How do you think he feels? Just wondering.
I would say disgusted. Like, I did all that work. I put in four goals, and you scrubs couldn't get one to win the game or just, you know, get enough saves to win the game. I don't think you're feeling excited or happy of, look at me, I had a career day. I think it's more disgust. Like, that's a great game, and you guys did nothing to help me.
I would be so PO'd. I'd be so agitated. I think I'd be sitting there saying, I can't believe I just scored four goals, and we bleeping lost. Like, I think that's what I'd be staring, you know, because home game at his palatial estate, looking up at the ceiling, just saying, I did that, and we lost? Like, if I would have told you before the game he would have had four goals, you would say, how many goals did the Stars win by? And they ended up losing in overtime.
And he lost a chance at being remembered forever in a way of, you know, like we look back at wins of, that would have been the Joe Pavelski game. If the Stars win the Cup or just go to the Cup final, it's always going to look back on Mel. Remember that game one?
When he scored four goals at 38?
Imagine he had the game won in overtime. He had five goals. Then he would have lived in immortality.
Well, I think everyone was hoping for that in overtime. But Seattle's been a fun team. And the NFL with these the NHL with these expansion teams have hit. Like the Knights, they had immediate success, and they've remained successful even through coaching changes. And Seattle was terrible last year. And Dave Hakstol, who they ran out of Philadelphia, and Dave Hakstol got the Flyers to playoffs twice, and it wasn't always the right fit, right? You need the coach to also fit the city. But I got to talk to Dave Hakstol quite a few times when I was in Philadelphia. It's good to see him now get the second opportunity. And in year two with the Kraken, to be in the second round of the playoffs, now up 1-0 in this series. And that fan base, right, Seattle, after getting the Sonics taken away, they were looking for a team. And to get the Kraken there, and also the great support they show for the Seattle Seahawks, too, with the 12th man, that's pretty damn cool. The fact that you're going to go to eventually game three, and you know you already have one game, one, and maybe even two. We'll see what happens the next time out. That's going to be some environment in Seattle. But I got to give a stock down to the Stars because they wasted a four-goal performance by a guy who's 38 years old. Talk about not respecting your elders. Hey, talking about your elders, Randall Cobb. He's now with the Jets. And you have people today, oh, this is ridiculous. See, Aaron Rodgers is start. Like, who cares? Are people really this irate about Aaron Rodgers bringing one of his friends to New York? You know what you signed up for? And I know there's some in the media, like pretentious people in the media. Oh, well, Rodgers lied to us, so we have to hold him accountable because he said he didn't have any demands, blah, 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 blah. Like, come on. Give me a break. The fact that so many people are talking about Randall Cobb today, who gives a flying bleep? The guy is going to help the team out because he's going to be there when Rodgers doesn't want to go to things in the offseason. He'll help the young wide receivers. Help teach him the offense. Help tell him what Rodgers expects out of the wide receivers. And the guy averaged 12.3 yards per catch last year. He only had like 30-something catches. But for bottom of the roster or bottom of the wide receiving room, I'm okay with this. Who cares? It makes Rodgers happy. So give a stock down to all the people in the media today that are crying and bitching and complaining about Randall Cobb signing with the Jets. And that's the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. That is the closing bell.
Big thanks to Jared Greenberg for joining us earlier in the show. NBA on TNT did a great job courtside last night with all the stars. Jessica Alba, who I find out Hickey does not like. I don't know why. That was like one of the worst things I've ever heard. Aaron Rodgers was in the building last night. Ben Stiller, a bunch of other people as well. Jared Greenberg did a great job talking about basketball and then also telling you who was sitting courtside at Madison Square Garden last night. And big thanks to Trevor Lane for joining us as well, talking to the Lakers, as that was a fun game last night, game one, and I think that's going seven between LeBron and Steph Curry. We'll be back tomorrow. I will actually be on location in Philadelphia. One of my best friends is getting married this weekend, so I'm not here on Friday. I got to do a bunch of things as a groomsman on Friday, so I'm going to Philly early tomorrow. We will do the show from Philly, and that's it for the rest of the week of Zach Gelb shows. Well, Friday we'll have a show. I just won't be hosting it. I think it's Bart, right? Bart Winkler's filling in on Friday, so good stuff. Hickey will be here on Friday as well. But I'll talk to you tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific. From the city of brotherly love, I'll be eating a lot of cheesesteaks this weekend. Talk to you from Philly tomorrow at one of our great affiliates, Sports Radio 94 WIP. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.